Salt is the most spectacular example I've ever run across of how an item of food can have a huge impact on the economies and the politics and the culture and religion. In the case of salt, every country in the world since before recorded history.
That's Mark Kurlansky talking about his book, Salt, A World History. He says salt has shaped the geography of almost every country in the world and decided the routes of our major highways. Gaul, the Roman name for France, was a reference to salt. And all those English towns like Midwich and Sandwich, that which is an Anglo-Saxon word for salt works. Same goes for Sebka in Arabic, which is still common for names of villages throughout northern Africa. Mark Kurlansky says salt even decided the fate of armies.
Salt, until the 20th century, was hugely important in part because you couldn't operate an army without it. Soldiers had to salt provisions or they had to live off the land, which is very hard for a marching army to do. And you need salt for not only human beings, but animals need salt. So you can't raise livestock or you can't have horses without salt, which means, by the way, that you can't have agriculture without salt. Also, salt was needed for healing wounds. So in warfare, the way to really curtail your enemy was to cut off his salt supply. But what really gave salt its first and enduring impact on history is the fact that a perishable food only becomes a commodity of trade when salted. Until the 20th century in refrigeration, if you tried to trade milk, for example, it would spoil, but you could cure it in salt and make cheese, and then you could trade the cheese. You couldn't trade meat, but you could trade ham. You know, you could trade salted fish. And this is what food trade was until the 20th century.
You've traced the history of salt in all parts of the world. Some of the earliest moments that you cite were in China. There are all sorts of stories there of people for whom salt made a difference, I guess, not only in their culture, but in their interaction with others.
Yeah, I mean, salt was a fundamental item. The Chinese government got interested in it very early on. All salt had to be traded through the Chinese government. It was the first known state monopoly of a commodity. You know, the Great Wall of China was built on salt revenues.
Do we have any idea how they came to understand the value of trading in salt?
The government understood the value of it because they realized that, as many governments after them did, that this was something that everybody had to have. And governments have always been very drawn to this idea of controlling salt because of its universal nature. And it's always been extremely unpopular and has led to lots of uprisings, as it did in China, and it later did in many places, including the French Revolution and the Indian independence struggle against the British.
I think people don't understand, actually, how often this has been the case. I certainly didn't. You talk about in China and in the French Revolution. I don't think anybody's ever mentioned to me that in the French Revolution that salt was an essential element in that. Can you explain?
France was, like other European countries, was put together by acquiring various different duchies and kingdoms and sticking them on. They negotiated different rules of salt taxation for each region so that when France was put together, there was a huge difference in the price in salt between one region and another because of the difference in taxes, which, of course, led to smuggling. And by the time of the French Revolution, there were thousands of people in prison for crimes against the salt administration, and there were soldiers. There was a special force that did nothing but enforce salt laws, and they were hated, and there were armed uprisings in rural areas against these salt law enforcers, and it was a source of great political unrest in France.
Well, unless we think that this is all of only historical interest, within the last half century, the business of imposing regulation on salt caused problems. I knew of Gandhi's salt march, but I didn't realize that it was so important. Could you explain what it was that was going on?
Like Martin Luther King, Gandhi was this wonderful character that, you know, has become a saint, and we tend not to remember him in all of his wonderful complexity. But he was a very eccentric man with a very kind of wicked sense of humor. Nobody ever knew quite what to make of him. He told the Congress Party, which was the independence movement and had very little backing, when they started talking about how to make it a national movement, he said, well, we can do this. We can unite India over the issue of salt. And they, all being upper caste Indians, well-educated, said, you know, salt, what, you know, there goes Gandhi being strange again. But he said, no, I mean, this is something that people really care about and are really angry about. And it's a symbol of everything that's wrong with British rule, because the British had banned the production of salt in India and forced Indians to buy British salt at high prices, meaning that the areas that produced salt no longer had any economy at all and were plunged into horrendous poverty.
So what did he do?
So he organized a 25-day march to the Arabian Sea, to an area where salt is naturally produced from the evaporation from the sun. It just piles up on the coastline. So this is the side of Gandhi that gets forgotten. He also called the New York Times and the Times of London and made sure there was lots of media and got this huge following every day, more and more, and it was covered by all of the papers in the world. When he finally arrived at the sea, this huge moment that the entire world was watching, he just bent over and picked up a clump of salt, and in so doing had violated the British salt law. And it was just wildly popular all over India. People started gathering salt from coastlines and demonstrating, and it was the beginning of the Indian independence movement.
Since then, though, in the last 50 years, salt seems to be much more common and much more widespread. For Americans, of course, there is nothing quite like that tubular cardboard box that we all have our grains of salt in. Is that a relatively recent development, the Morton's salt box?
Yeah, everything about that was quite original and innovative at the time in 1914. Morton's salt, first of all, accomplished something that salt makers had been trying to do for thousands of years, which was make a salt that was absolutely pure and white and even-grained and identical regardless of what its source was. And they came up with this cylindrical package, and even that, you know, that little metal pouring spout was a patented invention and launched in women's magazines what in the history of advertising is one of the all-time most successful campaigns, with the little girl and the umbrella and the slogan, "When it rains, it pours," which refers to the fact that in humid weather, the salt doesn't clump together. And in the original ad, they say that the reason for this is because Morton's salt is so pure. Well, not really. The reason for it was that they added something called an anti-caking agent. But the other thing that was added was iodine for the first time, which the medical community very much wanted Morton to do. And iodine deficiency used to be a great problem in the world, and in much of the world no longer is because of iodized salt.
By the way, half the salt produced in the United States is used for de-icing roads. Only 7 to 8% is put into food. Mark Kurlansky is the author of Salt, A World History.